part of the beauty of this process is that you see we're really all sharing one mind. And so there's no particular localization of the clarity, or if there is, it's only temporary. And lasts inversely proportional to the degree to which you think you have it. So there's tremendous wisdom. In fact, dialogue, sharing, giving voice together in a meditative context is an extremely powerful practice that we do a lot in our retreats. We go in and out of silence and invite speech in this way, and you'll notice we're holding it in exactly the same way as we would hold the silent observing of our own minds. Ideally, it would be an environment in which we felt safe enough to virtually say anything. And it would be held by all of us as just what's appeared without judgment, because that's what mindfulness is. Then it can be seen and heard in a way that is pure. And that can lead to new emergences that wouldn't come if there was this sort of winnowing by judging. Yes, no, like, dislike. But more a sort of a discerning, attending attention, a wise attention that hears distinctions, that hears shades of difference, but that doesn't condemn or pursue, but just holds. And in that way, we collectively listen to our hearts, each other's. And what you say may have a profound impact on other people, not because it's got wisdom in it, but because it's authentic. It's yours, and it's your feeling. That's a huge domain of meditative practice, is to actually pay attention to feeling states. And very often it's not emphasized in the spiritual traditions because there's a lot of terror underlying feeling states and a lot of sort of sense like some feeling states are okay but others are not. And so we tend to say, well, just drop it, put it down, go straight ahead, you know, whatever. But our emotions are as much a domain for attention, for wise attention, as sensations in the body or the breath or thoughts that are going through the mind. And if any of you have read Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, it's all about mindfulness in the domain of emotion. Not getting carried away by the emotion, not suppressing the emotion, both of which, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but let's just take anger. There's a huge amount of literature in medicine that suggests that the free-floating expression of anger and hostility is toxic. Okay? It creates all sorts of medical problems, including heart disease and certainly all sorts of other things. The swallowing of your emotions and the suppressing of them, all other things being equal, predisposes you to cancer. That doesn't mean that if you have cancer, that it's because you're swallowing your emotions, by the way. But there is a statistical correlation between squashing an emotion like anger and predisposition to cancer. So where's the middle path? What's the middle way between being completely out of control with whatever emotion comes up? It's a free country, I'm free to express my feelings. Does that sound like freedom? To be at the absolute mercy of any whim that comes through your mind and you go berserk to one extent or another and all the attendant blindness that comes along with that? Or to feel, I don't count. My emotions don't count for anything. The family will erupt unless I'm a doormat, unless I take on everybody else's pain, unless I just sort of silently trundle on. And so there's one tendency to swallow it out of a feeling of inadequacy or hopelessness. Both of those you can feel. I mean, you don't need scientific literature to tell you that they are not healthy relationships to emotion. So is there some way to work with feeling states that is healthy? It's to hold them in awareness and listen very carefully, just like we listen to the pebble dropping into the well. Listen to them and see if there's not a way. When you're angry, when anger comes up, it's telling you a whole lot of things about the world, about yourself, and listen to them, and then see if you can't work with that in some way that doesn't create more harm on the planet. It's a huge challenge. If you did that the next time you were angry, it'd be more valuable to bow down to your anger than to bow down to a statue of the Buddha. Can you see that? It'd be an incredible opportunity. The guest house. Put out the red carpet. Invite them in. Honor all of them. They may be cleaning you out for some new delight. Don't know. But maybe it'd be really important to look and be there. That's a highly intelligent way to work with the feeling states, and you grow as a consequence. Otherwise, you go round and round. Have you noticed, like, it's possible to go 20 years and have the same feeling? Every time your buttons get pushed, the same feelings come up? Anybody notice that? And your children are probably the best at it, or your siblings. Siblings may be even better. You need to just put three or four words together and you go insane. If anyone has said those words, it wouldn't make any difference to you. But if your sibling says them or your child says them, you know, you just lose it. What is going on there? What is the attachment? It's really worth looking at. One of the tremendous powers of attention is when you feel lost, when you feel confused, when you're in a fog, to not sort of bolt and think, oh, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I make a desperate jump into a marriage. What a good idea. I'll just get married. It happens, you know. It's the same question that I asked. What brings you here today? I mean, why do we get married? How do we choose who we get married to? The divorce rate in this country now is 50%. Very interesting stuff going on. And very often, we're not paying attention, or we're only paying very selective attention to certain things that we want to see or feel, and all the rest gets put on hold. And then as soon as you've sort of gotten more into that world, then you start miraculously to see and feel things that were there all along. I have a friend who was a graduate student with me at MIT, and at a certain point he fell in love. And I met the girl that he fell in love with. I knew this guy very well, and I loved him. And I said to him, don't do it. I said, don't do it. And I gave him a laundry list of reasons why, you know, because, of course, I was right, you know. So, of course, he got married. And then 3 years later, he got divorced. And then he said to me, it's amazing. It took me 3 years to see what it took you 3 seconds to see. And he said, it's always like that. You know, it's so much easier to see the karma of somebody else. You know, you can just see where people are going and how much they're not paying attention, just like clueless. Ah, driving right off a cliff. But then we get in the car, yeah, right off the same cliff.